Pitaya.
Hi everyone, I'm Joanna, and this is Hyphenated, the podcast about living in the hyphen. Now, you probably saw the title of this episode and said, do I really want to hear about this? I promise you, the conversation I had with today's guest is really interesting and insightful and honestly funny at times. As a Jewish person, I find it really important to talk about anti-Semitism and also dispel a lot of myths about it. So I invited Eitan Levine to today's episode. Eitan is a wonderful friend of mine. He's a comedian and a writer. You've seen his stuff in the New York Times and New York Magazine. And he's actually huge on TikTok, guys. He has a hilarious series on TikTok called Jewish or Anti-Semitic that's gone viral many times. He has millions of views. So Eitan, thank you so much for joining me. You know, I was thinking about who I should invite to help me process some of all of this stuff that is happening, you know, as a Jewish person in the world right now, it's feeling a little bizarre.
I thought you wanted to have me on to talk World Cup cricket. I guess
World Cup cricket will be for sure next week. We'll invite you on to that. I'm also very concerned about World Cup cricket.
But as we all.
For this week and for the past few weeks. Not a lot of Jews in cricket. A lot of Jews in comedy, which is how we met.
Hey now.
I'm not naive, and I know anti-Semitism has been, you know, a reality of this world since the beginning of time, literally since zero. Since Jesus. And I feel like at least ever since I've been on the internet, And since high school, I have felt anti-Semitism quite clearly. I haven't really talked about it very openly.
Which is crazy, by the way, because I also, like, until I became viral online for, like, Jewish TikTok stuff, had never really experienced anti-Semitism.
Because you lived in New York your whole life, right? Like, this is like...
Yeah, I'm surrounded by a bunch of fucking Jews.
Yeah. Because you have a series called Jewish or Anti-Semitic, which is a very funny TikTok series that's gone viral several times. So for you, it's been kind of like a new thing, right? To sort of confronted with this.
It's so weird also because like my grandparents are Holocaust survivors. So it's like you grow up hearing about anti-Semitism and the Holocaust like repeatedly. Like until like the past couple of years, I don't want to say got annoyed, but it was one of the things like, oh, the Holocaust again. You know, like it was such like a, I think like anyone who is like the son, grandson, you know, great grandson of a people that had been kind of persecuted. It's the same way where it's like rubbed in your face in like a very direct way from like the moment you're born. And then, you know, it's like when 2016 happened and anti-Semitism started to pick up, and which is crazy because something else happened in 2016 that I wonder if it was.
I can't really put my finger on it.
It's almost like those things are related. Oh,
I mean, is it Taylor Swift? Something happened with Taylor Swift. Is that what happened?
Yeah. That was the year she didn't get nominated for the VMAs. That was.
rampant anti-Semitism.
That's what I think it was, you know. But, you know, like you see it more and more, you know, around more swastikas start popping up in your news feed, you know, just like it, little by little bit, whatever. And then like, you know, when I started going viral for Jewish or anti-Semitic, I like started getting like comments that were just like, I mean, can I say kike on air? What is the word here? It's our word.
Oh my God, I have been called that word.
Why? What was the context even? Because anytime I've been called it, I'm like, what is this old? It's like getting heckled by the Nixon administration. It's like not, it's just like getting called a whippersnapper. Yeah.
No, but wait, Eitan. So fun fact, K-I-K-E. Is Kike, which is short for Enrique. So the first few times I saw it on my YouTube, I was like, wait, no, but why are they calling a guy called Enrique on my comments? They must be so confused. And I'm like, wait, why are they calling me a fucking Enrique? This is...
Oh, that is one of the funniest goddamn things I've ever heard in my entire life. There was one comment I got that just said, Jazz the Goose. J-A-S-G.
That sounds like onomatopoeias.
I was like staring at us. I'm like, what the? I'm like trying to figure, because it was from somebody whose name was like, I swear to God, it was like Shlomo Kuykenberg. Like, it was clearly an anti-Semitic. I'm not even I say that and not as something I made up, but like something that someone's name, whatever. And then after a while, I realized it was Gas the Jews, purposely misspelled. Cause like I looked on Twitter and stuff like that. So it's like, there's like anti-Semitic. Also people like will make swastikas. Like I'll get swastika comments. Like, which is crazy because like there's no emoji. Like they have to go in the back end and like
you have to try so hard.
Yeah, which is like so nerdy. Like there's nothing more like dorky than being like fuck the Jews. I'm gonna learn JavaScript. Like that's not like it's just like internet anti-Semitism is scary and also so dorky. Like so outrageously dorky and like, you know, so that was when I started to like experience it kind of like more and more like and kind of like see it. And then I will say also because like Jewish or anti-Semitic took off with College Kids, I've been dealing a lot with like Hillel houses and stuff like that. And it's been very interesting going and meeting people at like Hillel houses and hearing their stories, because I'll admit fault when fault's here. I used to think the problem was not that big. Whenever I used to see articles about, you know, Hillel houses on campuses getting like anti-Semitic hate or whatever, I used to be like, sure, that happens. But like, you know, everything happens. Like, you know, like it's a small amount of time, we're overreacting, whatever. And like, I truly do not believe that anymore, because like some of these stories, I went to UVM, University of Vermont, and their Hillel has like just there's no other way to say it except for the sexual assault group survivors on campus were marching and they wouldn't let Hillel House members march with them because of Zionism ties, which is crazy because like I understand that Hillel is pro-Israel, but it's not an Israel house. It is very much a house for Jews. It's if you need kosher food, if you need a Shabbat dinner, a Shabbat minyan or something, you go to Hillel House. So, you know, when you hear stuff like that, where like kids, like sexual assault survivors in UVM weren't able to march with the rest of them because of like literally anti-Semitic stereotypes, like this stuff exists in such a profound, absolutely disgusting way. And
we're a minority. I mean, Jews are an incredible minority, which, you know, I think we account for 0.2% of the world population or whatever. And then the hate crimes in the States, specifically religiously motivated, you know, 60% are targeted towards Jews.
Yes.
And
it's been ticking up.
It's been ticking up. But if over you look at history, if you look at history, literally since the beginning of time, and you know, before World War II, like during the Middle Ages, every single era of human history, when there's been a difficult time, Jews have been targeted. Like, pretty, and it's because it's easy. It's very easy to target someone that isn't allowed to be fully part of your society, or you're perceived to be not fully part of your society, to be the other. And you can point it out like, oh, they're the ones that go to this place. They're the ones that wear this. They're the ones that, you know. And for me, anti-Semitism, I saw it more clearly when I moved from the States to Venezuela. So I was in Boston and the majority of the kids in my school were Jewish. And like, I don't know. I took it for granted that I was surrounded by a lot of Jews. I just like never really thought about it. And then I went to school in Venezuela. There was another Jew in my class and everyone else was, not Jewish. And I started hearing a lot of comments that I had never heard before in my life. Like, yo, you're really nice for a Jew. Or like, you know, I don't usually like Jews, but I like you a lot. And I'm like, I don't know how to take that. That sounds like the opposite of what's good.
But do those people, like, have they ever met Jews before? Or are they kind of just, like, saying stuff that, like, from around?
So I think that's what I wanted to talk about, which is, you know, it's very different. Like, in the States, I see a lot of Jewish people being part of culture, like, of being part of Hollywood, of being part of, and, you know, that's what we're now, you know, we're being
accused of. Which we got forced into.
We got forced into it. No, we didn't want to go to California.
No, not at all. When you talk about the fact that we've been pushed to the fringes of society, it's like so often this relegation has led to us becoming experts and like industry leaders in things that like you couldn't, I don't know, in just like in industries that no one else wanted to be. And we became the biggest thing in it, you know, like money. Like the Vatican made Jews handle money because money was impure. And Jews were like, are you sure everyone's, this seems pretty important. And the Vatican's like, nah, whatever. Give it to
you
the Jews.
You do it. You do it. You know, you guys you're the one it. That you're the ones that have to like deal with all the money and lend money.
Yeah. Fumbled on the 5-yard line, if you ask me, when it comes to Christian control of money. But something like
and
that.
Also you know, trades. Yeah. And also trades. Yeah. And like in trade routes, like even when the Jews were expelled from Spain for, you know, being Jewish, and then they got to Holland, they were like, yo, we know about trade and trade routes. And then you had the Dutch Golden Age because of the you know, the knowledge these Jewish people had, because they were pushed to the fringes and forced into, you know, certain types of economies. And the same thing happened in Hollywood.
And even after, so what's interesting, there's a really good podcast I've been listening to called Gate Crashers, which is about like the secret anti-Semitic history of the Ivy Leagues. And there's things where it's like, do you know that the college admissions interview was started to keep Jews out of colleges? Like how literally fun. They would sit you down and because they had too many Jews getting it because Jews were smart. And they were also dorky. That was the problem, is that like back then the Ivy League was like, are you good at acapella and football? Come to Columbia, you know, like, like some shit like that. Weird time. But like they, you know, then all these Jews came in with like incredible, you know, incredible grades. And there were too many Jews coming in. They were afraid of those colleges having the IV like lore kind of taken away. So they used to have interviews where they'd be like, all right, what's your name? David. Okay, not great. What does your father do? And then if you were like, oh, he smokes salmon, they'd be like, next.
Next.
You're not going to Columbia.
Nope. You're out. Bye. Nope, you're done.
And do you know that they, do you know what the end of that was, by the way? They started a college in Brooklyn that was just the top floor of a building. So it was the same entrance. Columbia owned it. It was the same entrance exam, but they would send all the dorky Jews to there. And then they would let the Ivy League preppy kids stay in Columbia regular. So there was a college that literally was just all 100%. It was like 100% dorky Jews on the second floor of a building in Brooklyn. They would only meet at night.
Was it part of Columbia
or not? Yeah.
It was part of Columbia.
Same admissions people.
You know, and Eitan, I got to say, every single time I was in an interview, I would charm the shit out of them. So I feel like I could beat anti-Semitism through my charm.
Listen, we all can. All of our personalities. I mean, I wish we could. Historically,
Absolutely not. Historically, you know. I wish we could. That's absolutely not the case.
But historically, what we should have, I feel like every Jew should have had the same superpowers as Magneto. I think that is...
But we didn't. And it's so funny. I think our superpower is anxiety. And yes. I've said this for many years, and now I've seen more people say it, which is, you know, I think one of the reasons I'm so anxious is, and my family is anxious, is because like the chill Jews didn't survive.
Yeah.
Because it's like, you couldn't be relaxed. You couldn't.
And if you weren't chill before and you got out of it after, you weren't chill later. And then I remember, because then my parents would say, so, like later on when I would have like anxiety problems that have to go into therapy, you know, when I started to like, when everyone, you know, everyone goes through like a refractory period of like finding out that they need therapy or like need whatever. And I remember my parents being like, what are you so anxious about? And I just answered them like, you guys talk about the Holocaust all the time. Like, yes. No way. It caught up to me at some point, you know.
It's like clear cause and effect, mom and dad. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. But speaking about cause and effect, like, you know, a lot of people ask, like, how come a lot of the Nobel Prize winners are Jewish, even though they account for so little percent of the population? How come there's so many people in Hollywood? How come all these things? How come, like, they're trying to, and it's like, well, there's a clear cause and effect. Like, different cultures form in different ways because of how the world treats them and how they treat themselves. And like,
and how many cultures do we know that would have achieved the heights of what we've been able to achieve if they weren't, you know, taken out by the English, if they weren't, you know, occupied by some other forces, the Aztecs, you know, in Africa? Like, it just happens to be that Jews somehow made their way out of it.
And also, like, because of how Jews have been mistreated, there's always been a really deep importance of education. And, you know, my to give you an example, you know, my grandfather he only had a second grade education because he was kicked out of Leipzig. Kristallnacht affected his family, which is, you know, basically the day that the Holocaust began.
Yeah.
And he never had a bar mitzvah. But to him, education was the most important thing he could give his children. So all his kids went to school in the United States, even though they were from Venezuela. Conversely, my, you know, non-Jewish side, everyone stayed in Venezuela and went to university in Venezuela. A lot of my friends that came from Italian immigrants or Portuguese immigrants also just kind of stayed in Venezuela. But most of the Jews were like, okay, where's the let's have our kids go to the best education in the States, because you never know when Venezuela is going to kick us out, or you never know when things are not going to go right. So, you know, it's kind of like I feel like there's this new movement, and I think the internet has given platforms to such dumb people where it's like the cause and effect is so clear. It's like, why are there so many people here? Well, maybe it's because of this and this. But instead of thinking about it, they go, why are so many people here? Why are there so many Jews in the US government? Why are there so many people like successful Jews? They must be because they have a laser on Mars. It's like, no, wait, stop. There's an easier cause and effect here.
Yeah. And you force us to kind of like glob onto each other. Like we form these social circles out of like a defense mechanism. You know, like I feel I have such like mixed views on like the Hasidic community, right? So I grew up like pretty religious. I had like exposure to the Hasidic community. I wasn't part of the Hasidic community. So I feel like I still like barely have the ability to talk on it with like any sort of, I don't want to even say authority, but what, you know, because whatever. But like the Hasidic community has their problems. Like they have their inherent issues. But the Hasidic community bubbles off in a lot of ways and like went under like, you know, their own umbrella as like a safety mechanism after the Holocaust. Like a lot of what they do and a lot of their thoughts and like the way that they approach the world and the way that they approach like family structures are like to rebuild like communities that were lost. Like so many of these like Satmers, like, you know, St. Mary Hasidic, like these were communities that were in Europe years ago. And then had to uproot and come, like the scattered remains like came and found new home. So it's like the Holocaust and like, you know, just like genocide still permeates throughout the community. Now, granted, I do think they have their problems. I do think that sometimes that is used as an excuse to keep people in a certain way, or like to withhold education and further opportunities outside of the community. But I think that it does often come from an inherent genuine fear of having, you know, an atrocity, you know, like what happened to Jews in the 30s happen again.
Yeah. You know, I read a lot of books by 20th century Jewish authors and how, you know, here Jews really wanted to assimilate, and a lot of Jews did assimilate and even anglicize their names. In Venezuela, Jews were like, and in Colombia, but Jews were not allowed really to like be part of the country clubs and stuff for many, many years. And they were able to create their own society, their own school, their own country club, their own this, their own that. And so when I was back home in Venezuela, I had Jewish friends. And just for context, those Jewish friends lived in a city in a country that is 99% Catholic. There was only like 10,000 Jews. And my Jewish friends only had Jewish friends. They did not have non-Jewish friends, which was shocking to me. So then when I would go to school and hear people like talk about the Jews as if they knew them, but they never met anyone. They had never met another Jew. It was so easy to talk shit about them because, you know, they had they were very successful. And even like within my, and this is a lot of information, but even within my non-Jewish family, I heard some comments that really sort of shocked me. And it sort of is making me relive, like this whole recent series of events has sort of freaked me out again, because I thought we were in the clear. And I know that's naive, but I thought like, it's only getting better. Anti-Semitism is only getting less and less, but it isn't. I feel like it's resurging.
When did that change in your mind?
I think it started in 2016.
Okay.
And then, and also when I started doing stuff on the internet, Eitan, when I started expressing my opinion on the internet, I got a lot of hate from people on the left and from people on the right alike. And there it was like, oh, there isn't a clear reason why they choose to call me bad Jewish names, you know, like there isn't a reason, like I'm just stating my opinion. I don't know what being Jewish has anything to do with it, but they both latched onto it. And that for me was like, oh shit,
yeah.
this is coming back. And as we've seen in history, every time people are unhappy or people are not doing well and need a scapegoat, that's where I feel anti-Semitism always sort of like rises. And like, that's where we're at right now. We just went through, you know, we did 2016, we went through a pandemic. There's a lot of like, you know, inequality, economic instability. And people are like, why is this happening? Oh, you know what? Let's just say it's just the Jews. It's so much easier. And the Jew, and literally when you go into white nationalists Reddit or white nationalist websites or white nationalist anything, the Jewish question is at the center of it.
And I will say on both sides also, like you bring up like a part about like the left also, like I think bluntly, it's the anti-Semitic stereotype that Jews hate Palestinians is a huge fucking problem because it's inaccurate and it gives the left liberals a reason to not fully care when stuff like this happens. Thankfully, I think that narrative has been shifting lately because I think more and more Jews have been able to express clearly that like, hey, we don't like the government, but we have cousins over there. You know, like that's been something that people have been more okay, you know, bringing up. But for, I think that it's a huge thing. Cause like when BLM, you know, doesn't let Jews march with them, you know, like when stuff like that happens, it causes other divisions on the left where it gives a community, you know, like anxiety on both sides, which is like a huge, huge problem. And I have seen that also. Like I have seen, you know, the two kinds of comments I get are, I feel weird bringing this up because my views on Israel is, you know, like pro-Palestinian, pro-Israel. I hate the government over there. Like, I think, you know, like it's all that stuff that I'm totally cool, like, and fine, like talking about publicly. But when I post a video about bagels and a bunch of the comments are Palestinian flags and free Palestine, like, that's not because they're pro-Palestinian. Like, it just isn't. Like, it's them trying to, like, it just, there's nothing in those videos. So it's like you're just throwing the yoke of Palestinian rights onto anti-Semitism in such a forced way. So it doesn't.
In a guise of human rights, with a guise of human rights. Because if they cared that much about human rights, why aren't they caring about all the other countries that have severe human rights issues? And I'm not belittling what's happening in Israel, but it's kind of like that country's the size of Rhode Island.
I feel like stuff like that is, you know, and I think that there's a genuine concern and there's like genuine problems over there that I agree with. What I don't like is when it is co-opted by an anti-Semitic movement as like the term. It's not accurate. It's just, and it further puts Jews in a weird position because like there's a huge, sizable, massive chunk of the community that does not feel like the way we are being perceived by the left in regards to Israel. Like, it's just
a
fact.
Like, I've been to Israel twice and I felt like, wow, if any of this anti-Semitism becomes so rampant that I need to leave, I have a place to go.
It's tough to reckon with.
People don't realize that, right? That it's like,
it's a very complicated thing to reckon with, especially because it's like, it's a checkered, it's our home, our safety zone is, the origin of it is a not great origin. You know what I mean?
No.
But it's because it's we needed a place to go after the Holocaust and we went to an area that was already tension filled and we needed that home. And so much of the early defense of Israel is like, I don't know. It's tough. It's complicated. I mean, like, that's the dumbest way to put it. That's complicated. But like a lot of the defense of Israel was because there were Egypt, Lebanon, Syria, you know, were coming in to do a second Holocaust, like straight up. So, you know, it's complicated to know that, and then to also feel a certain way about the government and to know that at the same time, it's like, you know, our homeland to go to, if anything like goes terrible, which has in the past, it's tough to reckon with.
Well, I think right now Israel is being used and the complex and overly simplified issue in Israel is being used to call, ironically, to call Jews racists. Which is what I think is happening now. It's like you know, I hate talking about this guy because I just think this guy needs to be fucking canceled. And I think I wish we could stop talking about this person.
Tom Hanks
is an anti.
No.
You know, Kanye West, I know he's like,
yeah, we'll talk about Kanye.
I know he's mentally ill, but what he did was he brought anti-Semitism into a space that just felt like it would not be brought into, which is, you know, popular culture, which is, it's fucking Kanye West. And he's been saying a lot of crazy stuff. But the amount he got away with before, and then he started saying this stuff, and he's saying that he wants to kill all the Jews.
Yeah,
I'm going to be honest. I logged onto Twitter that day and my heart went to the pit of my stomach. And I'm like, I don't think people are going to speak up about this.
Yeah. And I mean, they have, though, this time. Okay. First of all, I think one thing you should do is look at my Instagram story right now.
Oh, God, Eitan, I'm so
sorry. See what happened. No. There's something I will say empowering that happened. And I think that because I'm only introing this because I think that there's like a difference I want to kind of bring up.
Okay, here. So I'm at your story and it says Bleacher Report. People were courtside at the Nets game wearing fight anti-Semitism shirts. Wow, this is in the way of Kyrie Irving's recent promotion of an anti-Semitic film on social media. Ooh.
Are you worried about all with the, like, the Kyrie Irving stuff at all?
I am, but why don't you let our audience in on it?
So, I mean, Kyrie Irving basically just tweeted about a movie that's like rampantly anti-Semitic. I can't even say the name.
Don't say it.
No. I'm not saying the name at all. But, you know, he hasn't backed down from it. You know, people have asked him. I think he's deleted the tweet, but, you know, he hasn't really done anything more than that. And I think that there's a huge difference between Kyrie Irving and Kanye. And that is that Kyrie Irving is an asshole who is sentient. He is.
Yes.
He can talk. Whenever I hear him in press conferences, I'm not like, man, that guy's got something off. I just think he's a prick. Like, I just think that he was anti-vax, you know, and now he's one of the reasons why the Nets can't win. He's like of right mind. Kanye, I think that Kanye legitimately has issues, mental issues that are making him unclear and saying stuff that he doesn't actually believe if he was of right mind and getting the treatment and help that he needed. I think that he is also surrounded by a group of yes men and a group of people that benefit financially off of him saying absolutely ludicrous stuff. And he used to have a little bit of a stronger circle that would like, let me back up. I used to be a celebrity journalist in 2015.
You love the Kardashians.
Love the Kardashians. I covered it when Kim and Kanye were married. I covered it during the St. Pablo tour when Kanye canceled the tour halfway through after like Kim's Robbie and stuff like that. At that time, he was going through mental health issues, a substance abuse problem. And I remember that it was like, it felt like it was the first time where they ever publicly were like, we're putting him in therapy or like we're sending him to a rehab clinic. And it always read to me like the reason why was because it was the first time that people started to lose money on him. It was the first time they had to cancel a tour. Shows got canceled. Like people were losing money because Kanye was unwell. Years later, if you watch his interviews and like it just, this is the ramblings of someone that needs to be put away from microphones and just go through therapy, rehab. He needs to be put on meds or whatever. I'm not a doctor. I won't diagnose him because I'm not going to say that. But the deeper, darker lesson here is that there are people that are benefiting off of anti-Semitism in such a profound way. He felt wildly comfortable being this openly anti-Semitic, like a week after befriending Tucker Carlson. And I understand like there's grumblings that he was saying weird stuff years ago and whatever. It's like, of course he is. He's mentally unstable. If you pass it's never the Episcopalians, it's the Jews. You know what I mean? Like if you're walking down the street and there's a paranoid schizophrenic running around yelling at stuff, he's not like the Episcopalians are behind the banks. It's always the Jews. Like, so this is so clearly someone that needs to get help that is not getting help. And I understand what he's saying is awful. It's terrible. It is giving certain anti-Semitic groups like a talking point. They can be like, Kanye was right or whatever. So it's like all of these different subsets of people that benefit off of anti-Semitism are all of a sudden huge Kanye fans. They all of a sudden think the guy's a genius, you know, and it's just like, hey, it's so obvious. Like, we all know what's happening.
What I think Kanye did, and I agree with you, he's clearly mentally unstable, but I kind of like don't care. And I just don't give a shit. Like, I just, you know, you're mentally unstable. So your racism and anti-Semitism is like, how mentally unstable do you have to be for that to be what you is like what you talk about is black people and Jews and how they are did stuff wrong and how they're dumb or how they're evil. Like, it just, it makes no sense to me, but whatever. I understand. I think I'm just frustrated at him. I don't want to pretend like
I know. I'm also
mentally ill means,
but I'm also frustrated. He does awful things.
What I feel like he did is like, there's no one more at the epicenter of like what these fringe people call like, you know, the elite and Hollywood and the liberal left than like the Kardashians and Kanye. Like, they were on fucking E! Network. And now you got this guy who was married to fucking Kim Kardashian. And he is saying the Jews are at the root of all our problems. And it's like, now all these fringe people, it's exactly what happened with Donald Trump, which is like, oh my God, he's starting to say what fringe group people are saying. So now it's okay to say it. And it's okay to admit it, and it's okay to be open about it because he did.
But the two things with that are, one, Trump, like Kyrie, is just a dick. Yeah. Like, I think that he just, whatever, opportunist. This never happened when Chris was in charge of Kanye.
Kris Jenner, right?
Kris Jenner. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Right.
It's so obvious, you know? But I get that, though. It's so frustrating because this is someone saying such hurtful stuff. Like, how do you look at someone saying such hurtful stuff and not be like, you're an adult? You know, like, I totally understand that element also. And I get where, like, there's so much, like, I get the other side of it. It's difficult. This is the most complicated, awful situation to happen in, like,
it's weird. And I have to say, I have a lot of friends that have posted stuff online, like, and it's frustrated me. Like, oh, now people care when he talks about the Jews. Oh, it's because he talked about the Jews that people care now. And it's like, whoa, hold up. Hold up. People have been talking shit about the Jews forever. The amount of anti-Semitism I receive is abhorrent. And the amount of, like, both aggressive anti-Semitism and passive anti-Semitism, because passive anti-Semitism is like, oh, you can't be Venezuelan, you're Jewish. That's passive.
You don't look Jewish.
Any of this stuff. Like, it's truly, at the very least, I always say, people hate me either because I'm a woman or a Jew most of the time. And, you know, I don't feel comfortable talking about it. I don't feel comfortable. I kind of don't want to. I don't want that to be something that defines me, so I don't talk about it. So when the Kanye thing happened, I was like, I'm scared because, like, I've had people show up to live events of mine to harass me and use my Judaism as a way of basically stating that I'm evil. So, like, I'm scared. And I don't like talking about this, but I am. And it's like, then I see people posting online, like, oh, these, like, literal, my friends, my actual friends, saying, like, oh, really interesting that now people are giving a shit when he says one thing about the Jews. And it's like, actually, this is just the tip of the iceberg of a lot of violence and a lot of hate that's been percolating and continues to percolate. And if we don't put a stop to it and talk about it, like, we're going to be in big trouble, bro.
Yeah, I also, here's the other thing is that, like, we've marched against this stuff. Like, it almost feels, on both sides, like, I think that sometimes, like, when racism stuff pops up, when anti-Semitism stuff pops up, a lot of the times the communities will come in and be like, no one talked up about us when X, Y, Z. Mm-hmm. And that's just, like, most of the time, not that true. And, like, you know, it's like, if we take that stance, it's so unhelpful to be like, that they didn't stand up for me then, so I'm not going to stand up for them now. And I see it on, you know, I see it on both sides. And it's something that I in myself tried to, like, make sure that I never have the ability of having someone say that to me, of having, you never marched with trans people, you never donated to bail reform, not bail reforms, all the bail, like, get this person out of
jail. Well, you stood up against, like, you know.
Yeah, like, that stuff. And I just, all we can do as, I think, like, one of the things that we can do as, like, Jews specifically is to make sure that no one ever has that ability to say that. You know what I mean? Like, I think that I have made sure that I have never, that no one will ever say that to me, that Eitan didn't stand with us you know, during that time. But it's true. I mean, like, I see what you're saying online also, and it does feel so belittling. And so, like, that's not the fucking point here, you know, especially when I don't think it's 100% true on their side.
You know,
people weren't talking about Kanye when he was saying other stuff. Like, that's just inaccurate. I've literally reported on it. Like, it is straight up inaccurate.
You know, it's interesting because, like, I always talk about identity and how, like, I sometimes wish my identity were so simple. Like, I really wish sometimes my name was Ashley and I came from, you know, the suburbs of Chicago, from a nice place, and I was, I don't know, Episcopalian. Is that the Robin Williams? Robin Williams was like, I'm this type of Protestant, which is like the chillest version.
Oh, that's, I have no idea. Man,
anyway, I don't know.
The lack of stuff I know about Christians.
It's bad. It's like Lutheran, Lutheranism. Anyway.
I mean, I choose Eitan over Evan. My legal name is Evan. I could have at some point made sure everyone called me Evan. It's weird.
I have like a complex relationship.
You grew up with anti-Semitism. Like, I don't know what my stance would have been had I like grown up in a place where like there was Jew hatred.
Ironically, Eitan, I felt incredibly Jewish up until like the Jewish school in Venezuela wouldn't accept me because I didn't come from a Jewish womb.
Oh, you're a mudblood.
Yeah. And then I am a little bit of a mud. I am 100% a mudblood. But then I was like, I'm still Jewish. I feel really Jewish. Yeah. And then I started.
Which is such I just want to say, I agree with you, by the way. I think one of the most outdated systems that we have is this gatekeeping over eugenics in Judaism.
Like, it's like, bro, I got 23andMe. Yeah. It says I come from Ashkenazi blood.
Yeah. Also, like, if you're willing to take on the religion, like, okay, take it on. Like, don't be a dick about it. Like, we should be more inclusive with this stuff.
Well, it's like, it's interesting because we're not inclusive. We are, me, you and me, Eitan are, but like, the Jews are not inclusive, I think, as a reaction to the fact that they were not included in society.
Yeah.
And that's something I've had to like really understand because, you know, I'm married to someone who's not Jewish and he's had to deal with, you know, certain comments and assumptions and, you know, stuff from my extended Jewish family that I've had to like really fight against. And, you know, he doesn't get frustrated because he's like, I understand. Like, I understand why this happened. I understand that this is centuries and centuries of people being persecuted and they're just trying to look out and they're afraid of like being obliterated again. And I understand that. And it's like, you know, it's such a complex and wonderful identity. You know, I always say that being Jewish is like having an American Express, which is, it has amazing perks, but it's not accepted everywhere.
Oh, that's hilarious.
Isn't it? And it's like, that's sort of how
I love that. Cause that's like Borscht Belt level.
That's Borscht Belt.
Yeah. I feel like Chubbs Goldberg just said it on stage with the Copa.
There we go. It's Joanna Hausman saying it unhyphenated.
Look at this. Hey, hey, hey.
You know, Eitan, it's crazy. Our ancestors weren't just like, oh, fuck this. I'm just going to, whatever. Turn me Catholic. This is ridiculous. What stubborn people.
Yeah. My grandma escapes the Holocaust, comes over to America and sends my mother to Jewish day school. Like, there's no other, like, that is, there's so many examples of people that, rightfully so. There's a lot of Jews that like after the Holocaust, like threw off the yoke of Judaism, you know, and
that's where the self-loathing Jew, the concept of the self-loathing Jew really comes into like the common vernacular.
Yeah. It's like I want to get rid of this thing. I need to shield myself from this if this like ever happens again. So I'm going to move to Nashville, Tennessee and like, you know, open my pharmacy and never, you know, acknowledge this. It's interesting. And then those people, it's like, how many stories do we know of people that will like find out years later that their grandparents were Holocaust survivors, you know, without them knowing and everything, you know, and it does, I think personally they're my personal journey of like, you know, I grew up like pretty religious, hated it. And like, you know, years ago, like didn't want to do anything, didn't want to be associated with the community, like left, you know, completely. And then like organically found my way back into it. And I think like the way that I organically found my way back into it was like the culture and pride side where, you know, I was like, I like the culture. I like the lessons from it. And I like, there's like a morality in it.
Yeah.
And then also like, we've been through a lot. We outwitted, outplayed, outlasted survivor, baby.
Outlasted.
Doo-doo, ho, ho. But yeah, like, you know, like we figured, I don't know, like we persevered like through stuff. There's like, there's pride in them. Like we, the way we finagled our way through so many like tricky times in our history is like, how can you not be kind of prideful about that?
We finagled a bagel. We finagled a bagel.
We're bagel finaglers.
Yeah, because I am an atheist. I don't believe in God. I don't believe in anything. But
well,
I am Jewish.
This podcast is over.
Eitan will never speak to me again. But, you know, and a lot of, you know,
you can be Jewish and an atheist. You know how many atheist Jews there are? That's what's great about a religion.
Atheist Jews. Yeah. It's not a religion. It's an ethnicity. It's a
to some it is a religion. To some it's a race. To some it's an ethnicity. Like it just it can Judaism should be able to be felt by the person feeling it in the way that they feel most comfortable doing it.
Yeah.
If you want to be more religious, be more religious. If you want to be less religious and take other stuff out of it. Like, I think that every couple of years there's the Pew report, which I don't know, they just call all the Jews or whatever. I don't know how they do it, but like, you know, they acknowledge that like the numbers of Jews is dropping and I'm like, yeah, well make it more friendly, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Let's like shift it a little bit.
Yeah, more
I want to invite more people. Like, I want my kids to grow up Jewish, even though they're technically 20, will be 25% Jewish, according to 23andMe. But I don't, you know, that doesn't matter to me.
And if you represent Judaism in a way that they like, then guess who's going to want to get fully converted in a more religious setting later on? Your kids. Like, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
If the product is good, then don't worry about the commentary. Like, they'll figure it out, you know?
Yeah, they will figure it out. And it's, you know, my grandfather's also an atheist, and because he survived the Holocaust, and he was like, yeah, there's no God, bro. Yeah. but he, when you ask him where he's from, he says, I am from Venezuela, but I identify as a Jew. And I always asked him, like, why do you just say you're a Jew? And he's like, Joanna, I was born in Germany. I was kicked out. I went to Venezuela. I had to leave. I can't be in the States. Right now I'm in France, but there's anti-Semitism. So I'm just a Jew. And it's like, there's this real nice, like, piece to it. There's a piece to his identity. There's something he identifies as that gives him a sense of, you know, of who he is pridefully.
Yeah, it's home.
It's home for him. And, you know, I hope that people listening, like, understand the value of that and understand the value of fighting against people that don't see it and that don't value it.
If you were pro the concept of safe spaces, then you have to be pro an ability for Jewish people to kind of like feel a security, I guess.
To exist. Yeah. Dare I say?
Yeah, same.
I know that's a tall order. Yeah. Eitan, usually when we talk, we're laughing every 2 seconds, and here were like true. 9 a.m. in the morning, like looking at anti-Semitism in the eye and saying, not today, Satan, not today. Well, Eitan, you know, thanks for setting your alarm for anti-Semitism early today. Hey.
Anytime.
Coming back onto Hyphenated. We love having you. Maybe next time we'll speak about a more uplifting subject like bagels.
Hey, you know what? Hanukkah's around the corner.
We could talk about Hanukkah.
Hanukkah story.
Yeah.
Nothing better than watching non-Jews try to say Hanukkah. It's hilarious.
You see them fear it. They're like, oh, happy
Hanukkah.
Hanukkah? And they're trying. They want to say it right. Yeah.
You're like, God bless your evangelical soul.
God bless your evangelical soul. And Eitan, God bless your Shlomo Pinchas soul.
Joanne, thanks so much for having me on. This was so much fun and everything. I'm happy we were able to talk the talk.
Yes. Yeah, talk the talk, Eitan. You know, you're always invited on Hyphenated. Boy. You're a good friend and a nice mensch.
Oh, my God.
A nice mensch.
That'll be approved.
Not a schlamazel.